I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends, or you're at the bar, or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato holding it down at the DraftKings studio in Boston. We got a great show for everybody today. As always, download, subscribe, rate, review us, leave us a five-star rating, and check us out here live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network. You can check out the best of Gojo and Golic noon to 1 p.m. Eastern wherever you hear VEASAN on the radio. We are in line for potentially my favorite show that we've ever done. Claudia, please tell the people why.
What a teaser there. Gus Johnson will join us live, play-by-play legend on the playoff to talk some hoops. Chris Harris Jr. will join us live, former NFL corner in hour two to tell us why he loves Bo Nix. And from diss to kiss, this is what we're really excited about. Gojo drops his own response track to Chris Long and Drew. Can we fast forward to that? Because that's the thing I'm really excited for. But we have to start in the NBA because we do have round two of the playoffs. The Celtics and Thunder took care of business. Celtics 120-95 win over the Cavs. 18 threes from them. We knew the defense was good for the Cavs, but not really showing up. They dominated the boards, almost 50% shooting from the field. And then the Thunder, another dominant win, 117-95 over the Mavs. Luka, I don't know if he's 100% or not. Not looking great. Just 19 points for him. Kyrie, 20. 15 turnovers for the team. So if you're looking at both of these round two game one games, Gojo, which team impressed you more, or which, I guess, team was a little more telling whether they won or not?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at the two performances, Dad, I watched the Boston Celtics game and never really felt uncomfortable. This is a team that's been together for a long time, has a ton of postseason experience, and really, for the most part in this game, left no doubt. You've had banner performances from Jaylen Brown all postseason so far. Derek White has been a revelation for the last few games and once again was red hot from beyond the arc. And so that team looked like there was a massive gap between them and the Cavaliers. For Oklahoma City, I was more, I think, impressed because for a young team to watch them mentally withstand some of what happened in that game, the fact that every time it got close, every time Dallas made a run, they seemed to have an answer for it and buried them at the end of it, I thought was really impressive for a team making, or for all intents and purposes with this core, their big-time postseason debut.
Yeah, I was sitting there like a fan for a while, like Russell Crowe from Gladiators. Are you not entertained? And no, unfortunately, I wasn't very entertained. You had a 25-point win and a 22-point win, double-digit leads at halftime, where it was still within range, but then the winning team just kind of pulled away, even though it was still not out of reach in the start of both the four quarters. It was getting there, and then it ended up getting there. But I agree with you. You know, you look at a young team, and when they might, like the Houston Texans last year. We didn't really expect that out of them. For Oklahoma City, we knew they were a playoff team, but do we expect them to be the number one seed? You know, coming off with the reigning champs, the Denver Nuggets, you know, right there in your conference as well. You know, normally you look at a young team, you look at a young team like Orlando. They came in as like the fifth seed. And, hey, can you pull a surprise, you know, as this young team starts to grow? But this young team in Oklahoma City is like there already. They do get the number one seed. They hold off Denver and Minnesota for that top spot. So I love the way they're playing right now. You know, you look at, as Claudia mentioned, about the shots from Luka. Luka is not 100%. It's one of those things where, again, when you're nicked a little bit and you go on the court, you can't use the injury as an excuse. You just can't. You know, some say it's not an excuse, it's a reason.
And he did it, by the way, when asked about this after the game.
No.
Did not make that an excuse.
He did not. But that's, you know, there are reasons out there, and you wonder how much the knee is affecting him when he hurt. That he hurt in game three, I think it was, in the first round. You look at two teams who, you know, haven't won in the second round yet, and you're talking about a Luka injury, and you look at Denver, and you're talking about a Jamal Murray injury. You know, a guy who played so well last year and now is shooting horribly, as we'll get into, you know, as we look ahead to some of the games. Is the injury affecting him? Or maybe, you know, you ought to give some credit to the Minnesota defense, which is just absolutely housing him right now. So it's got to be a little bit of both. I agree with you from the question Claudia asked, that Oklahoma City being this young team and taking care of business the way they are.
Well, I think it is a little bit of both. I mean, what worse problem could you have than being less than 100%, especially with a lower body injury, for someone who's one of your primary ball handlers going up against? I mean, Dad, you've got to be thrilled because defense is on the menu this postseason.
Oh, we
saw the Timberwolves smothering performance the other night. Oklahoma City so far is allowing 90.6 points per game in the playoffs, the fewest through five games by any team since the 2016 San Antonio Spurs. So this is elite level defense that we're seeing. And I don't know, part of it, like, Luke is not an old man by any means, but definitely the older of the two teams here. We've talked about the Thunder as one of the youngest teams. Like, man, the youth is on display, this kind of defensive intensity throughout the entire season. And that's been the case for both them and the Minnesota Timberwolves, is being young enough to sustain that energy throughout this entire time is such a weapon for them. And on the other side, I just think the clutch shot making, whether it was Jalen Williams late, obviously Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
You even saw, I mean, Chet Holmgren for a lot of that game kind of got his ass whooped at different sections. You saw him get physically worked a little bit down there on the block. They were going at him, and yet that was a guy that never backed down, hit a bunch of big shots along the way as well. And so the mental toughness, as much as anything, of this Oklahoma City outfit was on full display last night for that team. And Dad, I don't know, as you look and now survey, as we start this second round here, they're the one seed. I think a lot of people, after the Timberwolves did that to the Denver Nuggets, looked at them and said, maybe that's the best team that's sitting in the Western Conference right now. For Oklahoma City, do you think this rebuttal's enough for them to still be looked at as the one seed in the West?
I mean, listen, they're proving it. I have a feeling, and I'm going to ask Claudia this in a minute, it's probably a tough question to look forward to, is if Minnesota knocks off Denver and Oklahoma City knocks off Dallas, Oklahoma City's the number one seed, Minnesota's going to be favored in that series, I got to believe. I'm not a line setter or a betting person, but I would be stunned if Minnesota wasn't. But I love what Oklahoma City is doing. Quick, Mike, going back to that, how they spread out shots. SGA took 19, Holmgren took 16, Williams took 15. So they're spreading them out pretty evenly. And you're right about defense. Between Chet, the big guy on defense, and Lu Dort, what he's doing at the guard position, what he's doing to Luka. I mean, the dude is just like flypaper on you. It is really, it's very, very cool to watch, because when we talk about defense, you can X and O defensive slides and rotation, but a lot of it is want to, man. How bad you want to stay in front of that guy, you know, who's in front of you. There's a lot of that. And boy, watching Dort is really impressive. And he held Luka to another poor shooting night, 6 of 19, just 19 points. So I agree. Like anything else, it's rarely one thing. It's usually a combination. Give them credit for the defense, just like you give Minnesota credit for the defense. But certainly neither one of those guys we talked about, Murray or Doncic, playing at 100%. But you know what? As I said, you're on the court, it don't matter. You can't use that as an excuse.
it is kind of interesting to think about this particular Oklahoma City team in the context of the bigger NBA playoff picture. Like, the haul that they got, including Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, from the trade that sent Paul George over to the Clippers, now in a summer where we wonder if Paul George is even going to be there anymore, and they're shown the door early on this. What Sam Presti has done in architecting this team. I mean, Dad, think about the impossible job for Oklahoma City for years, going all the way back to 2012 when they make the finals with that prior iteration of their homegrown big three that included James Harden coming off the bench, to losing all of those stars, to getting other guys like Russell Westbrook and Paul George in there and parlaying that into a bunch of picks and then having to go out and hit them all. I saw a Sixers fan say last night that the Oklahoma City Thunder are the actual process. And I think that there is some truth to that of this team that for so long had to tank and had to draft incredibly well, and they managed to, in successive drafts, go and get cornerstone pieces. And then obviously Shai coming over in that trade with the Clippers ends up being the capstone on a group that now, with this young of a core, looks like they could be a force for a long time here and like looks joyful doing it, Dad. I think that's the other part in the difference between them and Boston is – I don't know if it's been the pressure on Boston for so long because we've had this core together and because there's so much expectation. No one seems like they're having that much fun. Like, Peyton Pritchard every once in a while will give you some emotion, but for the most part, that is a cold, dispassionate killing machine in Boston. They're like Thanos. They don't actually care about who they're beating. You're just nameless gray faces. Whereas on the Oklahoma City side, you see those guys in the interviews after together. They all seem to be having fun. Being the same age and all those things kind of help, but there's a marked difference. Dad, in one side looking like they're enjoying winning and the other side looking like they're just relieved they're not losing.
Well, I mean, it's because they all have their team meetings at a Chuck E. Cheese. They're all kids. I mean, it's amazing. I wonder if Chuck E. Cheese is even still around,
when these guys were kids, they're that young.
I know, but you know what a lot of it is, Mike, is expectation, right? Boston, the expectation is they're going to play well in the regular season, kind of like Dallas, and then find a way to screw it up in the playoffs. So you're waiting for that. There's Denver, who wins the title that last year, and now the expectation is there again this year, and they're down 0-2. Then there's Oklahoma City with a young team, these guys running around having a ball. The expectation wasn't I'd like to go back. I don't know. Did any of the analysts or in the beginning of this season say, Oklahoma City, now a viable playoff team, did anybody say they're going to be the number one seed? Maybe some of them saw that, but that's what I think is one of the more interesting thing is they're young and they're almost exceeding the expectations right now while they are this young.
Guys, I can't put age to this. I think the Celtics just play monotone. Like, if that's a way to describe it, they just play at a monotone level. They just do. SGA's 25. Tatum's 26. Tatum is still relatively young, and I just think that's the way he plays. And we can get into his stats and the fact that he hasn't really shown up in clutch and he hasn't shown up in these playoffs either. And I think that's what sets the pace. I don't care if you're 35 or if you're 22 years old, if you have that type of energy. Like they say, age is just a number. If you're playing young and acting young in a way where you have that energy, then it doesn't matter. So I think age is just a number when it comes to Tatum. I think he's been a big issue, and Boston fans out there, don't hate on me, but we're making comparisons with Anthony Edwards and SGA, and Tatum was supposed to be in the MVP conversation, but why didn't he stick through that? It's because he doesn't show up. Right now, playoff career low from the field and from the three. He's third in points in the postseason behind Derek White and Jaylen Brown. He is leading in rebounds and assists, so maybe changing his game up a little bit, but finished only 18 points, 7 of 19 shooting last night, 0 for 5 from the three, which you can't do. He was asked about what it's like to win, even when he's not playing his best offensively. Here's what he said.
Really just what I've been saying all year. We got a really, really talented team. Shows the depth of our team and you know how we can win games in a lot of different ways.
Like I said, plays monotone, sounds monotone. It's just what this team is. So going back to the age thing, Gojo, I don't really think – I understand age has some sort of play here, but I wouldn't give, you know, the Celtics all that – I don't want to call it credit, but discredit just because of the age.
No, I think it's a good point. It's a good reminder. The reason we've always been so high on the Celtics team is their core came together so much ahead of schedule that it feels like they've been around for so long. But you're right, Jason Tatum is young and still probably coming into the prime of his career. I mean, most of these guys, it tends to be that 27, 28, 29 range when we get their best basketball. And so that's still ahead of him. But Claudia, you hit on it. This is a... I think for the most part, in terms of perception, this is a personality thing. Like, I think if Jason Tatum stepped to the mic and addressed it the way Anthony Edwards does, we'd excuse this away and say, hey, the Celtics are a deep team. This guy's a leader who knows how to delegate. But instead, when you combine this with the very damning clutch time numbers that we've been over, Tom Haberstroh has come on this show, and the numbers are what the numbers are for Jason Tatum when it gets down to business in the fourth quarter. There's no running from that. But I think so much of the rest of this is the fact that you don't get a ton of emotion. You don't get a ton of that alpha dog stuff that you're getting right now in other places. Comparison is the thief of joy this postseason. And because of what Jalen Brunson and Anthony Edwards are doing, Dad, there are a lot of people feeling less joyful when they don't have those guys on their team.
Understandable. But listen, I'm one of those guys. Tatum's not changing. He's not going to all of a sudden flip to this, you know, big dog guy who's going to give these incredible pressers. But the bottom line is, if he were producing on the court, nobody would care. Nobody would care. They would probably actually joke about it and say, oh, the monotone guy, but boy, oh boy, he's a killer on the court. You know, he gets it done, but he's not right now. He's not getting it done the way people want to see him get it done. They have the talent to spread it around and win these series, but the question's going to be, can you win the bigger game in the Eastern Conference Finals if you get there against, you know, the Pacers or the Knicks? Will Kristaps Porzingis be ready to go after this round? So I am not one that cares about how you act or what your emotion is, because if you produce on the court, on the field, on the ice, it doesn't matter. It does not matter one bit. And right now, he is not getting it done that way. And Mike, we've gone over this before about, man, if you don't take that shot. LeBron heard that the first time he passed off on a game-winning shot. But LeBron's clutch numbers, when he shoots, have been really good. He just didn't do it as much as Kobe or Michael because he passed and looked for a different shot. And if it worked, great. If it didn't, he got ripped. So Jason Tatum is not the player LeBron James is, but he's kind of, as far, you know, as all time, but he's a guy that's going to look for the play and say, I have other guys to pass the ball to. I guess I'll break it down this way. And something that started at the beginning of time and won't change as long as sports are going on. Winning is the best deodorant. If you win, it solves everything.
Well, but in this case, it's not. Like, they're having these conversations about Jason Tatum while they're winning. I think that's the unique part of this, is the Boston Celtics plucked the wings off the Cavaliers last night. And people, and I mean, Claudia, it sounds like in Boston, this is the conversation that's being had by people out there. Where, Dad, for them, you know, the other part of this, too, is if you win long enough at a certain level, what happens? People get tired of it. They're like, all right, why haven't you won the championship yet? Why haven't you won the MVP yet? This Boston core has been really good for a long time, and so that's when the nitpicking tends to start. We lived through this at the end of Brian Kelly's tenure at Notre Dame. You're winning double-digit games every year. It's the best stretch of Notre Dame football in my adult lifetime, really, in my entire lifetime, the best consistent stretch of football, and it became, well, why aren't you winning the playoff? Why aren't you winning a national championship? All these things that pop up once your threshold gets to a certain point. I think that's why Boston fans now can sit here even after wins, even in the midst of another season where they were the most dominant team in the NBA, statistically, record-wise, and there's still people that are going to wake up on sports talk radio and look at Jason Tatum and go, why aren't you those guys?
That's fine. I mean, that's fans. So fans think that way. So what? I mean, so what? If I'm a player, I don't care. We're winning right now. So get back to me when it's a tight game, they're in a tight game, and Jason Tatum comes up small. We've seen at times that happen, just like we talk about with Harden and it not happening. But if I'm a player, I don't care if that's on sports talk radio in Boston, which I'm sure it is right now they're winning. And that's all that matters. That is all that matters at the professional level. So yeah, I just don't care what's going on with the fans and with the radio on the shows and what they're saying.
Like you said, Senior, though, I think it is a conversation because of the clutch time numbers and because of these postseason numbers.
Okay.
And on top of that, he's going into the post conference saying that he doesn't want the ball in the stretch time because he doesn't want to take over the game and that they have a deep team, which they do. That's the reason they were so successful during the regular season. But if you want to be that MVP, if you want to be one of the best players in the league, act like it and play like it.
You want to be on the championship team. I mean, that other stuff can come along with it. Are you, as a Boston Celtic fan, Claudia, if they hit a game-winning shot in Game 7 against the Knicks to go on to the finals, and it's Jason Tatum driving for the win, and he kicks the ball out, and somebody else makes it, and you win, are you going to come in the next day and rip Jason Tatum for not taking the shot?
Senior, I didn't go on sports radio and say this. I'm just saying this is the narrative. I don't care. Yeah. I just want to win. No. But I think if people want to keep putting him in the MVP conversation, you can't. I don't think he takes over the game like other players.
I agree with that. Yeah. Well, I agree with that.
And the thing about all of this is, Dad, the way they've been doing it has not worked. Like, the Miami Heat have been the capper on them, and they're not even good by most people's normal estimations. And so I think that's the frustration, is it's come up short. The way they've been handling business has come up short. And the other part of it that will always be sort of just wild to me in terms of this conversation happening at all about Jason Tatum is he's supposed to be one of the Kobe guys. Like, him and Devin Booker made this whole thing about being the Kobe guys, and I never understand the Kobe guys being the ones that say they don't want the ball under the game. That's the entire Kobe system, is mama mentality. I want to be the guy with the ball at the end of the game. That's the weird part to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm just not ripping anybody while they're winning. You know what? When they start losing and not looking good and it's same old, then I have no problem going back to that conversation. But keep winning, keep moving on, and however you have to.
I'll take it.
Speaking of winners, coming up next, Rudy Gobert puts himself in some rarefied air with another Defensive Player of the Year win, as he deserves it. Next. I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome Stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends or you're at the bar or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
As Gojo said before the break, rarefied air. Rarefied. I messed it up. Damn. This is why I can't do the diss tracks. Rarefied air. Rudy Gobert. Fourth defensive player of the year. Rudy Gobert won his fourth. Yes, he did. 2018, 2019, 2021 with the Utah. And now this year he joins Hall of Fame centers Dikembe Mutombo, Ben Wallace as the only four-time winners. And as you can see, Victor Wembanyama, second in second place votes. And then you had Bam their third, which we can have the conversation. Should Victor have gotten more votes? I mean, he's a rookie. He has a lot of time to win this award, and I'm sure he will win several. But Senior, off air, you said, can we put Gobert in the conversation now as one of the best? I think you can probably answer that yourself now, right?
I mean, it's a fair question, right, Mike, to start to ask. You know, four-time Defensive Player of the Year, only three to do it. The other two are believer in the Hall of Fame. So that's what you start to do. You start to compare to things like that. And certainly not an offensive threat by any stretch of the imagination. Remembered mostly for, you know, a lot of times, obviously a great defensive player, but then if I remember correctly, he's the one, you know, rubbing all the mics during, you know, before COVID got going, right? You know, and ticking everybody off. I don't think he's that well liked overall.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, Rudy Gobert gave us COVID.
Come on, not him, super but just spreader. That act. It just, you know what? I've never thought of him that way, Mike. And you know, a lot of times with like a Hall of Fame play, you just say the name and you're like, oh yeah, Hall of Famer. Or, no, I don't think so. Or, could be. I never even put those two together, Hall of Fame and Rudy Gobert. But, you know, this has to give him some credibility toward it, that's for sure.
It does. Like, so this comes up because there's a lot of people, and I remember this happened with Jokic when he was on the cusp of winning back-to-back-to-back MVPs or something of that nature, and there was a small group of people who had pulled that off, and a lot of people use that as their argument of why it shouldn't happen, because how can you put at that point a player who hadn't won a championship and who wasn't then considered the best player on the planet this kind of historically great company? And I think that's a poor way to legislate who wins awards each year. Like, this is an award for the 2023-2024 season. This isn't an award that decides where Rudy Gobert sits all time for defensive players, because I agree, I don't think we put him in that standing with a lot of those same players. Rudy Gobert is a great defensive player. He's one with bad vibes that people don't really like, that his peers don't seem to respect every time they're polled or asked about it. And I think we figured it out. The biggest factor is we crunch the numbers back here is he just doesn't have an intimidating enough face when you compare him to like Dikembe Mutombo or Ben Wallace to be considered one of the greatest defenders of all time. And I think that's what's really holding him back. So, Dad, all those things together, I think, make it fine for him to win Defensive Player of the Year. But again, for me, we shouldn't be saying, well, can we give him this Defensive Player of the Year? Because if we do, now all of a sudden he has to join this conversation. It's kind of, honestly, it's kind of like the conversation we have about Michael Jordan and LeBron James and the rings, where it was never about, in my mind, an exact ring count when you got these guys together. It was everything else about their career that said, yes, this is automatically happening. There's a reason why plenty of guys who have six championship rings aren't considered the GOAT alongside Michael Jordan. It's because we can all see the rest of what goes on, and I think enough of us have seen the rest of what goes on to say Rudy Gobert is a great, like, generational, for this generation, one of the great defensive players and defensive big men, but all time, I don't know if he registers on the Richter scale the same way.
Yeah, listen, I agree. It's just a matter, it matters what the point of entry is for the Hall of Fame. I believe, you know, I'm looking at Ben Wallace, a guy who we just tied, you know, his stats, and if you want to say, obviously the game has changed, but, you know, he's scored way more than Ben Wallace did, as far as if I'm looking at points per game and rebounds per game, I think he's better than both of them. So at some point you have to put that into play, right? I mean, he's not a name I just associate with some of the great defenders of all time, but I'm not, you don't have to do that for this conversation. You have to put him in with other guys who played like him who are in the Hall of Fame. So do we consider Ben Wallace and Dikembe Mutombo two of the greatest defenders of all time? And where do you rank them? And then where do you put Rudy with them, since that's who his name is mentioned with right now?
Yeah, I again, the Basketball Hall of Fame to me is a little bit different of a conversation, just because it's all-encompassing. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame, and so I generally, it's not to diminish the accomplishment, but it just, it's not as exclusive feeling as something like the NFL Hall of Fame or Major League Baseball's, where it feels such like a cutthroat road to getting to that point.
Agreed.
The other interesting part of this is Victor Wembanyama, in terms of the counting stats and blocks per game, steals per game, all that stuff, actually outpaced Rudy Gobert, and just then a lot of people pointed to the fact that his team was bad. Now, Rudy Gobert won Defensive Player of the Years on teams that were fifth-ranked teams in the West. We've seen Nikola Jokic win MVP as the sixth seed in the West, but, you know, being dead last certainly, I think, in some people's minds affected it, but I would go the other way, Dad, and say you look at the rest of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you've got Coach of the Year, you've got Sixth Man of the Year, you've got other guys that were finalists for awards, which is what happens when your team wins. The rising tide lifts all ships, but Rudy Gobert had help around the rest of this team. You saw that the other night. We don't have to say, and our producer Bailey, who is a diehard Timberwolves fan, protested the minute one of us fixed our lips to say that the Timberwolves looked better defensively without Rudy Gobert on the floor when he was missing for the birth of his child. We won't go that far, but we will say the team was able to go out there and function incredibly well without him. And with the San Antonio Spurs, you take Vic away, and they're even worse than they already were for the majority of this season. And Victor Wembanyama at least has the right attitude about it, Dad. He gave the quote to Bleacher Report early this year. He said, I know Rudy Gobert has a very good chance of winning it this year, meaning Defensive Player of the Year, and it would be deserved. Let him win it now, because after that, it's no longer his term. Like, I have a feeling he's right about that one, and maybe it's Rudy fatigue or anything else, but what Victor offers us as a player is going to be too enticing to pass up from here on out.
Yeah, congrats to Rudy four times. It's incredible. You deserve, you know, a tip of the cap. But I'm with you. I look at Wembanyama and say he was second there, rookie of the year, and just the possibilities of what he can do. And hopefully at a quicker pace that San Antonio can build some pieces around him.
In the meantime, outside of this news, so congratulations to Rudy Gobert. Claudia, we had some news pertaining to that series, actually, on the other side. Jamal Murray, surprise for a lot of people, not suspended, yep, coming off that throw of the hot pack onto the floor.
Not suspended, but he does have to pay $100,000. That is the fine. And I didn't realize he threw a towel and then a heating pad with 4:41 remaining. So this was live in the game when the Timberwolves were up 49-30. Now, despite the heating pad's best defensive efforts, they lost by 26 points, 106-80, and now they have to play on the road down 0-2. And I think that's more of the story. And you talked about how this defense looked. Either way, Denver just looked lost. And whether that is because Jamal Murray is a little banged up or not, throwing a towel and a heating pad on the court, that's not definitely not mama mentality, definitely not championship mentality. Do you guys think this was enough of a punishment, though, senior?
Oh, I did not think he was going to get suspended. Just for the thought of why the head official said he didn't get ejected, that he threw it, they thought, out of frustration and not at anyone. Now, unless he just pulled it off extremely well and was throwing it at someone, that wasn't the vibe the ref got. And if that wasn't the vibe the league got, I could see this. I didn't think he was going to be suspended. And we sit there and talk about money. Dude makes $33 million this year. 100 grand fine. Now, nobody ever likes to give money back, but, you know, one he can afford pretty well. I never thought a suspension was coming in this anyway. I thought it was just going to be a fine.
I didn't want him to get suspended because I don't want any excuses in this series for what Minnesota is probably going to continue to do. At the same time, he probably should have. Like, Tim Legler made the great joke the other day on Get Up, but Jamal Murray was 3-for-18 shooting. How can we necessarily say he didn't intend to hit anybody? He just wasn't hitting anything that night out there on the court. So I do think, like, we always hear in sports, oh, we can't, you know, gauge intent when it comes to fouls or things that happen in the game. Right. But yet here the officials are like, oh, he wasn't trying to hit anybody. He was just mad and threw the towel and the heat pad. Like, he threw that on the court while people were playing. If someone, and this is one of the other things, too, is we do outcomes a lot. If someone slips and rolls an ankle on that, we're talking about World War III in this series and the response that you would have seen from the Timberwolves. So he probably should have been suspended and is getting off easy. I'm glad he's not, but $100,000 lighter still on the table now as Jamal Murray and this Nuggets team are going to try and mount a furious comeback. But coming up next, we got to have words with the basketball community. Austin Rivers chose violence yesterday on the Pat McAfee Show, and we got put on for our team next. Growing up playing sports, I learned really quickly that how you do the little things is how you're going to do everything. That's why coaches always harped on us about having our hand behind the line on sprints or picking up our locker, because that was going to directly translate to critical moments on the field, making sure we're lined up right, taking the right steps so we can go out there and execute and win ball games. Small actions can have big benefits, just like how taking care of your gut can support your entire body's health. That's where our friends at Seed come into play. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic is going to benefit your gut, skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. I just got my welcome kit and started taking Seed's DSO1 myself, and I'm loving it. I love the convenience of being able to have it in the cabinet with my other supplements because you don't need to worry about refrigerating it, and I love the free travel vial that comes along with it. I'm constantly on the road, and so being able to take DSO1 with me on the go is huge for my lifestyle here. I'll tell you what else I love is the fact that it's backed by science. DSO1 was developed in collaboration with Seed's Scientific Board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you can trust. And it's great in convenience, too. Probiotics and prebiotics work best when they're used consistently, just like any other routine health habit. And Seed's subscription service is going to easily help build DSO1 into your routine, again, with no refrigeration required. So, trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO. Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato. And yesterday, the timeline went to war, friends. No, not actual World War III trending like it usually does for all the various reasons in the world right now. Instead, this is good old-fashioned war between sports. Austin Rivers, former NBA player, joined the Pat McAfee show yesterday. And it seemed like kind of out of nowhere just decided to swerve and try and take out football as a sport, as a label, all the above. Take a listen to what he had to say about the ability of basketball players to do football easier than football players could do basketball.
Where the best athletes in the world are, that's us. I could take 30 players right now in the NBA and throw them in the NFL. You cannot take 30 NFL players and put them in the NBA.
It's because you only allow five on the court. Let's all relax.
It's because you get a break every play. All you got to do is catch the ball and run north or south.
Listen, our sport.
It ain't complex.
Wow.
All right, Austin.
What?
Well, first off, Austin Rivers, by the way, just listening to him talk, if he hasn't had conversations with WWE, like Triple H needs to get on the phone. That guy seems like he's got a little bit of that heel to him where he'd be comfortable playing the bad guy there. Because, he's got a little bit of that stuff to him, Dad. But we have this conversation over and over again. I think what felt different this time around is he put a number to it in a way that usually doesn't happen. Yeah. Where it's not just, we think a basketball player could make the transition to football easier than a football. It's, it's so easy, I could get 30 guys right now to do this. Dad, what's your thought on this always been? I don't feel like you and I have had this argument as much.
My thought is I think basketball players are the best athletes in the world. I think they're incredible athletes. I do. But I also, when you're sitting there talking about switching sports, the one name that always came up was LeBron, right? LeBron played tight end in high school, probably could have gone on and done it in college. Who knows where else? There's just some people that are just different than others. And he had the size. He had the body type, right, at 6'8". 260, because you look at like a Sam Laporta who's like 6'7", 255 or so.
You look at a bunch of tight ends that have come from basketball. You look at Antonio Gates. Exactly. You look at all those guys that actually made it. Exactly. Like, they've got concrete proof of this.
Right. They have concrete proof that they could play to a certain level of basketball, and then they went to football. We don't know if there was thoughts of a Tony Gonzalez or an Antonio Gates trying to make it to the NBA, and that wasn't going to happen, so they went to football. I don't know that part of it. But the tough part for this is, if you go from football to basketball, there are just those five spots on the court where you're playing both ways. Football, you can kind of put a guy somewhere, right? Wide receiver, tight end, D end, and kind of find a special teams player. So you can find a place for someone. The one thing that Austin, it got ridiculous saying all you got to do is catch the ball and run. The hardest thing for the NBA player to come into the NFL is when you get smacked in the face. All right? When all of a sudden there's contact.
This is the thing.
There's contact in the NBA. There's collisions in the NFL. And that is something, one of the biggest things that those players would have to get used to, is the fact that you are going to get your ass handed to you, and ain't nobody going to be looking up at the ref calling a foul for it, because it can happen every single play. So I think that's the toughest hurdle for an NBA player coming to the NFL.
Yeah, I look at this and say, but first of all, like we always say the NBA players are the best athletes on earth. The guys in the NFL fields are insane athletes. I've seen some of the sickest stuff I've ever seen in my entire life on those fields.
Just because I say one is a good athlete doesn't mean I'm saying the others aren't. They're great.
No, I understand that, but I think that's a collection of the best athletes on planet Earth. And I think athletically, a football player would have a lot easier time making the jump to go playing basketball than a basketball player would have the jump making the physical jump, the jump of what you just described, the collision jump to the NFL. Because that's what almost all those guys to a man have said is, you guys are insane playing football. It's a little bit different where you're not driving the lane worried about, am I going to get hit? It's, are you going over the middle and worrying about your brain? So, like, having to negotiate with your body on the line chips down like that is a little bit of a different factor. And for most of these guys, if you got hit the way Micah Parsons unloaded on that sumo wrestler the other day, they'd fold like a lawn chair. That's just the reality of the situation.
I agree. I agree that of going to both sides, the toughest transition would be the basketball players taking hits, without question. But if you start looking at skill sets, put the NFL player on the basketball court, and now it's like, okay, they wouldn't get hit as hard as they were on the football field, but could they actually do something? Could they actually be more than the 10th guy, 11th guy, 12th guy on a bench, you know, where you're going in? You know, I would imagine the hardest transition from NFL to NBA would be shooting, right? Would be the fact that sure. They haven't been shooting in God knows how long. Oh. Now shooting, the skill of shooting a shot.
Basketball is an incredibly skilled sport, full stop. Like what you've got to do between dribbling, shooting, and all those things, it's incredibly learned over reps over time. So I don't discount that portion of it all. And you're right, football, it's a math problem, right? Is you can create more defined roles. You can be a red zone threat. You can be someone that exists as a pass rush specialist. You've got so many more of those things because with more parts, you can have more siloed behaviors. Whereas in basketball, even the guys that are defensive specialists got to go down and be able to afford them something on offense. That being said, and Andrew Hawkins pointed this out the other day, let's not also act like it's impossible to reverse polarity on this. I mean, Pat Spencer was a college lacrosse star and is on the Golden State Warriors bench and has gotten garbage time minutes right now.
Yes.
The guy played 4 years of lacrosse at Loyola and then won at Northwestern, was not by any means blowing people away, and now made an NBA roster. So he was a really good athlete from another sport, and he found his way over there. I mean, hell, that Jalen Brunson's 6'1", balling out right now, giving these dudes hell on NBA courts, and you're telling me I can't get a physical player to go out there from? And by the way, a lot of these football guys, like, this is what I want to know. How many of the basketball guys that we see make it to the NBA had football offers coming out of high school too? Because I had plenty of teammates in college who had basketball offers coming out of high school, and you can keep doing that. They would go and run 5-on-5 with like our women's team or with guys from the men's team over at the court. Once you leave high school football, even if you played that far, you don't get to play that anymore. So these guys are, at least most of them who like basketball, continuing to work on the skill set.
I do think you could transition both ways, but I'll go back to two Hall of Fame football players. Did they try to make it to the NBA, and did they think they couldn't, in Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez? Yet they went to football and they became two of the greatest of all time. So again, while I think they could make transitions, a lot of it's going to be is, okay, but then how good could you be doing it? Because there's NFL players that can play in the NBA, but again, how good could you be? Where would you be in the rotation? I'll tell you this right now. You give me first pick, and I don't know all the basketball players who had played football when they were growing up, but just looking at bodies right now, you give me one guy, I'm going to put him in the backfield, and I'm going to put him on special teams. Donovan Mitchell, the Cavaliers, 6'3", 215. Dude's got the football shoulders going. He's someone I would put on my team and find a spot for him.
Oh, if you're looking for like guys there, like I saw Chris Long named a bunch of these, but Josh Hart would be a ton of fun to see there. Prime Russell Westbrook as a running back or as like a box safety. Hell, even Anthony Edwards. Like there are guys that are good enough athletes on both sides and in that range, because I had a lot of people trying to tell me, oh, these NBA big men, I would just have them set the edge or play offensive line. Like, buddy, if you're over 6'10", you're going to have a dude's hands in your chest so quickly pushing you into the quarterback's lap. Football is a leverage game overall. That's the biggest differentiator where you talked about those guys that played football, Dad, is if you're not baseline tall enough at a lot of positions in basketball outside of the guard spots, you're kind of screwed.
Let me tell you, and we've joked a lot about this over the years. We've been doing shows together. I talk about O linemen being the least athletic on the field. There is not an NBA player that could make a transition there. A, they just don't have the body type to be on the O line. That skill set to be an O line, especially a tackle, it's just not happening. We kept talking about the kid from North Carolina State, DJ Burns, you know, at 6'8 or 6'9 and like whatever he was, 280 or more, and a transition of which he's not making to offensive line. How difficult that would be. I think that would be one of the more difficult things for someone outside of football to come into football and say you're an old lineman, except if you play Australian rules football like Mailata, left tackle for the Eagles. He's made it look pretty damn easy.
Yeah. Hey, you know, at the end of the day, respect to all these guys. They're some of the biggest freaks of nature in the world, and that right there perfectly underscores it. We're going to try and lead with love coming up next. There's been a lot of animosity here. We're going to, like, throttle it back and start to hand out some love next.
Welcome back to Gojo. Rizzo and Golic. Forget about diss tracks. How about kiss tracks? Yes, you heard that right. Our buddy Chris Long over the Greenlight Pod, him and Macon Gunter came up with kiss tracks, and our very own Gojo was a part of it.
Gojo. The Apollo Anton, oh no, of hot takes. Pump the brakes, not him. He is him. Gojo, bad guy? Heck no. Good guy? Y'all already know. Hello, Gojo. Gojo. Hello.
That's it.
Yeah.
I like Mike Golic Jr.
He's a hot 16.
Then. Yeah.
Okay.
Gojo, response.
Incredible spoken word there. Yeah, listen, you know what? I like what these guys are doing. We had the Drake and Kendrick beef taken over the timeline for a while, and they wanted to inject a little bit of love into the universe there with some rhymes, and I greatly appreciate that. I love Macon. He's a great guy. I've gotten to know him over the last few years. They obviously do an awesome job at the Greenlight podcast there. Chris Long had an incredible one, by the way, for Ryan Russillo. Do we have a little bit of that? Because Chris legitimately might have a future in this.
Ryan Russillo, rough like a Brillo, but people who know him say soft as a pillow. Mm. He uncles with love. The child care is glorious. Like Bo with a glove, we deserve to see more of it.
Mm.
Stood tall like Jokic when the key card was broken. Timeline hit like Kermit Washington. He's Rudy, passed out, sloppy drunk. There was no forced entry. Cops were stunned. Game plan Tony Bennett not to run. Feet said he took the charge. It was no fun. Season like that Sixers guard off a Heat run.
Lowry's.
Wow.
Lowry's. I can say, Chris is sort of good at this. So I thought
that was
as a kindness back to them. I if you guys will allow me the indulgence here, I wrote one for Macon and I wrote a couple of other ones for some of our friends in sports media that I wanted to try out in the spirit of paying it forward with these kiss tracks here. So Macon, this one's from Macon over at the Greenlight Podcast here. Macon Gunter. I just learned his last name. You probably know him from Greenlight Pod fame. Realtor by day, but when he steps to the mic, he's the guy with the takes you can't help but like. Sneaky tall like Steph Curry, auctioneer extraordinaire, paces Zach Brown no hurry, and a great head of hair. Started in the DMs like an IG flyout. First time potting together, it felt like a tryout. UVA strong, he's a fan to the max. Now we're texting buddies, always talking some lax. There was that one time we bet on the game between Virginia and Notre Dame. The Hoos couldn't be stopped, and after that dub, we agreed that I'd join their monogram club. Now my mailbox is full like making schedule for showings with reminders to donate and support UVA rowing.
Wow.
Wow.
Senior, did you know he had it like that?
No. That was actually... You rhymed very well.
For background on that, Macon and I did bet on the UVA-Notre Dame lacrosse game a year ago. Yeah. I lost and had to donate to their monogram club, and now I receive paper mail from them all the freaking time. More than Notre Dame's monogram club, quite honestly, which is ridiculous and the best bet ever. So you guys liked that one. That was pretty good, right? That worked all right?
That was great.
I'm not going to lie. I was ready to be cringeworthy, and it was very good.
Good.
All right, well, here we go. I did one for Jason Fitz, friend of the program here, also musical background. So I'm counting on Jason doing the rebuttal here. And I figure he's been on this show and around this show enough. He's earned this one. And I'm trying to be nice. The goal is to be nice in all of these. So here we go for Jason Fitz. The fitzy bitsy spider that went to Juilliard, rosined up his bow and played that fiddle hard. Parried like fencers with the band on the road, played When I Die Young to sold out shows. College football Mondays where he and I met, watched him drink two monsters in 5 hours on set. I looked at this Muppet like, is this a joke? Stared him right in his face and said, save time and do coke. Hair spiked like punch, tats all tell a story. Of Vegas to Nashville to Bristol for glory. Funko Pop stacked like Steven Jackson. All the smoke in his basement higher than fashion. Now adding up splat points because he's about that action. And today he's yelling Yahoo to all of his haters, hoping this will be the year for his beloved Raiders.
Wow.
I'm stunned. Mike, are you doing these on your own? I mean, I am. Now, you've always been the smart kid, the academic All-American and all that, but to be this creative is kind of stunning to me.
Drake needs you as his ghostwriter.
Yeah.
I almost had a Drake bar in there. I was going to make a joke because Fitz really has always talked about wanting abs and wanting to potentially get liposuction. So I thought about, but again, thought about making the connection there, realized this is about being nice, mm-hmm. not about actually dissing Jason, who we love, and so we gave him a little bit of love there. The last one I did was for Mina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've got one more here, and then you guys can grade the performance overall. I'm riding a high right now. I don't want to bust up the streak, but I feel pretty good about the Mina one here. This is the last one I did, so now the ideas were starting to flow a little bit, and I think we got a couple of good bits of wordplay in here. So here we go. The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Like upgrading to first class, it's worth every penny. She put down the pen not because she lacks, but to pick up the mic like running backs. Morning roast like Folgers to around the horn until an NFL Live star was born. Now trolls and haters throwing her dumb shade have success rates lower than goal line fades. She's the most imitated, Emmy nominated, Times crossword accommodated, mom to a grande baby. She rips Etch-a-Sketch in watercolors, receiving wholesome tweets sent from her mother. EPA, but she don't play about Seahawks draft picks every draft day. When DK Metcalf came off the board, that tiny woman let out a mighty roar. She yelled at me on draft day when DK Metcalf got picked. It was very
scary. I remember that. I'm stunned. I can do nothing but give you an A. I am absolutely amazed at how good that all is. All you need is somebody to drop a beat behind
yes.
it, you know, a little bit. I think that's what's got to happen, is we need a beat behind that to make it more professional-like.
Is this one of your proudest moments of your son, senior?
I am.
Sadly, low bar.
It was. Let me put it this way. I'll say this. It was better than what Macon and Chris did on their show. Chris's was better than Macon's. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, Macon's on yours, I liked. Chris didn't seem to really like it much, what Macon did with yours. But between what Macon did and what Chris's was better, but I think yours were better than both of theirs. Mm-hmm. I'm really impressed.
We really just do need the beat. And I think Brandon, our social media team, just needs to get a beat behind yep. it and yep. new track released.
Well, I was going to say, agree. The thing I thought of when Macon was talking was this probably all skews a little bit more spoken word poetry than it does actual rap battle, which is probably good because this is supposed to be kindness, and so maybe that's the better medium for it. But
but yeah. I think, Mike, if we put if you do this again and we put a beat behind it, you would be able to get the words to the beat. I think you have the ability to do that. I would love to see what that sounds like. That would be very cool. That was a great job. I listen, I'd love to rip you for it, but I can't. I sure as hell couldn't do it. Not even close, unless somebody did it for me. So that's really impressive.
Senior, I feel like you should try.
You know what? Now?
No.
Oh, man.
No.
No. Write a kiss track for mom. Do it. Give her that for Mother's Day this weekend.
Yes. You have to now. Because she's watching, probably. And
I was going to say she is watching. I just saw that now.
She is. She's going to want me to do something. So everybody can laugh at me then. Yeah.
No, we won't laugh
at you. Oh, yes, you will. Oh, Claudia, who are you kidding? You'd laugh at me. You absolutely would.
No, I wouldn't.
I love your mom. Mike, I love your mom. Isn't that enough? Do I need to create a song to say that?
There you go. And you set it on a public platform, too, which counts. But now you don't even have to get her a card this weekend here. So that's great. You've just covered all your bases.
I'll just stick to the cake. Yeah.
That is true. Not a bad way to go about this. So our crack social team will clip those off, make sure that they get put in front of the appropriate parties here. And then I'll be curious to see, especially I'm counting on Jason Fitz big time on this one. He is literally someone with songwriting credentials. Like he is someone who has been a songwriter in Nashville when he was playing for the band Perry. And so I have a feeling he's going to be able to come with some heat. Hell, he wrote the track for a Cheez-It ad that we did years ago. So
he did.
I trust his pen as much as anything else. Mina Kimes was a former writer. I mean, for God's sake, I mean, not former, I guess she could still do it now. So all of that is currently on the table.
They got a long way to beat you, Mike. I tell you what, you are way out in first place here. Everybody's got a lot of work to catch up to. I was very, very proud father moment right now.
Thank you, Dad. Coming up next, though, someone who I think could spit a few bars themselves, Gus Johnson, the legend himself, next on GoJo.